Hi, I'm Roy Spencer of PermaSeal. For over 45 years, we've helped over 500,000 homeowners make their homes drier, healthier, and more valuable. Our warranties are transferable and estimates are free. Call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. There's a shortage, actually, of therapy dogs and cats and other animals who do this sort of work. We'll talk with Annie Peters about that from Pet Partners. Rich Crowley is the treasurer and past president of the Chicago Herpetological Society. How you doing, Rich?
I'm doing well, thank you, Steve.
Well, first off, I think this is where we start. What the heck is a herpetological society?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think not too many people study Latin these days, but you kind of have to go back to it. Herpetology, where it's based off of, is the study of reptiles and amphibians. So essentially our cold-blooded friends, which not everybody has a friendly relationship with, but hopefully we can sway that through our efforts.
Well, and a part of those efforts are educational, which we'll get to in a moment. The Chicago Herp Society has long been an important player on the scene. So, for example, if an animal that happens to be cold-blooded, like, a lizard of some sort, comes into Chicago Animal Care and Control, they don't necessarily have the expertise to take care of a leopard gecko or a blue-tongued skink. However, you do, and you've been helping to rescue animals, your organization, for years now, right?
Yeah, since 1967, when our charter originally started, we've been hanging in there, helping out law enforcement and in many ways, even the general public and our membership with not only educating them, but also with assistance when needed with finding more suitable homes for these animals.
And a part of your mission is to educate. I know you have a newsletter that I receive. You actually write about serious studies that have been done about various turtle species, that kind of thing. But in addition to that, there's a show every year. I mean, you're involved in communicating to the public that wants to know about reptiles as you can.
Yeah, we have a regular publication that goes out monthly, which is an unofficial publication that a lot of scientific journals not only subscribe to, but contribute to. And we've got a long history of great new findings and articles from up and coming scientific professionals. Sometimes they're getting they're sharpening themselves with our space for the first time.
So, Rich, this is the question. During the pandemic, it seems everyone went out and got a leopard gecko or some other type of reptile. And in fact, the pet stores in some cases were selling out of them. What do you think it was where suddenly people went bonkers over a variety of different reptiles?
Yeah, and I think we were the same as what we've seen in the dog and in other pets, of course, dog and cats and birds and such. People were home, they were looking for something to do, and they had the extra time, and having that companionship, even scaly animals are great companions in the right environments. And we saw a surge on that. We saw record levels of sales. We saw breeders who were producing snakes and lizards and turtles and tortoises for the first time selling out. We saw a lot of people jumping into the foray, anticipating that the demand would continue, which it did for a while, and then now we're dealing with sort of a glut of not only available overproduced animals in some spaces, but we're also seeing the downside with a lot of pet sort of surges and acquisitions is that we also see a huge amount of animals being rehomed because people jumped into it ill-informed or a little bit too enthusiastic and buying more animals than they can maintain.
Hmm. Yeah, not necessarily surprising. Now, dogs and cats are domestic. I'd argue that maybe bearded dragon lizards are kind of halfway there. Maybe. Yeah. Corn snakes are kind of halfway there. But by and large, most reptile or amphibian species are not domestic. They have very specific needs. How important is it to do your homework first?
Oh, it's critical. And I did dare say go to the extreme to say it's a matter of life and death. Because if you don't do your homework and you don't anticipate the needs of the animals, they don't have the capacity to regulate certain environmental conditions for themselves. And they will die over time from a number of deficiencies in their habitat and in their diet. And we've seen this time and time again over the decades that reptiles and amphibians have been kept in captivity. You know, I think it goes to say, you know, amphibians need fresh water and certain types of water in some cases, and they need to eat certain types of food with some frequency. And people don't anticipate like what it takes to actually not only provide that, but provide it consistently without fault. And also be able to provide, you know, the appropriate nutritional food options. We see that with reptiles, of course. You know, we've seen cases where people have fed vegetarian lizards and tortoises inappropriate food items that lack certain nutritional value, like calcium and such, or maybe too rich in food, which we've seen affecting tortoises' shell growth. So the list goes on. I mean, people don't realize that there's thousands and thousands of species of reptiles, amphibians, and they all have, in their own way, they all have particular specific needs that we have to mimic in captivity.
The other thing that I think is exceedingly important, even if you spend, I don't know, $35, I really don't know how much a leopard gecko is now. I'm trying to think of a less expensive option. The habitat that that animal lives in can cost you $335 with the lighting and the caging and then other odds and ends that you put inside where that animal lives. So all of that needs to be considered, not to mention veterinary care. Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that we often see is that people make, I'll call it economic decisions when it comes to keeping animals. And you know, going the cheaper route is not always the most appropriate, of course. And, you know, you could spend a lot of money on animals for their habitat, you know, to make it look nice. But if, again, if something goes wrong, you know, an animal just gets injured, you know, veterinarians are a fantastic resource for seeking out emergency medical care. But not all veterinarians specialize in reptiles, amphibians. So just trying to be prepared. People often don't think about it because they're like, yeah, I'll do fine. I'm not going to need them. But, you know, reptiles, amphibians could live a long time. You know, we've got the extreme end of tortoises that could live well over a century. And we have snakes that could go up 40, 50, 60 years. But even as you mentioned, the leopard gecko can go 20 years. You know, just old age eventually, you know, may require special veterinary care. And you have to do your homework. And it's not inexpensive. I mean, these are highly specialized professionals that go to a lot of school and they have to stay up on the latest. And, you know, medical doctors in the field of, you know, humans are dealing with one species. The veterinarian's got to deal with, you know, literally thousands of different species. So it's definitely challenging. The good news is, for the most part, reptiles and amphibians are fairly resilient when you take care of their basic necessities, diet and habitat. And they can be very resilient in certain conditions, but you still have to take care of it when things happen, even if it's just an accident.
Absolutely true. The good news also is that we've got some great, they're called exotic veterinarians, or veterinarians that do that are called veterinarians that also do exotic medicine. And we've got some terrific choices in the Chicago area. I want to ask you about what you think, if it's up to you, that say for a 16, 17 year old, or not necessarily as I think about it, even, I don't know, maybe that's an adult at 16 or 17, but an adult, meaning in their 20s or 30s or older, first time reptile owners, what choices do you make for that first timer? We'll talk about that when we come back with Rich Crowley of the Chicago Herpetological Society on WGN. Rich Crowley is the treasurer and a past president of the Chicago Herpetological Society. Is it okay if I just say Herp Society?
Absolutely. It's a mouthful otherwise.
Yeah. My mouth is full most of the time. All right. It's up to you. Give me some choices as to, okay, someone's not had a reptile or amphibian before and wants, here's how I say it. I say it, having one, a reptile or amphibian, brings a bit of the natural world into our concrete world. And I think that is beneficial, particularly for kids. First off, what do you think of that statement?
Oh, no, I totally agree. I think it bringing nature into the household in some form, you know, whether you're starting off with, you know, tropical plants, or you go with an aquarium with fish, et cetera, it does. It connects you with nature. I think we've seen that time and time again. There's been studies to sort of support that as well. And it is something that I feel like everybody should at least educate themselves and see what's out there. But before you go jumping in, you see that cute little turtle or small lizard in a pet shop or otherwise, do your homework, because it's going to be a companion you may have for quite a long time and you want to be successful. So educating yourself first and then figure out what works for you and your family, because if you're young, you're certainly having a household full of maybe siblings and parents that are going to be there helping to interact with the animal. And if you're older, you know, looking at how you're going to chaperone or oversee, you know, maybe a reptile you're getting for your, you know, one of your kids. You know, what happens when the kids are struggling with the care? You got to make sure you have the information there. And, you know, we got the internet with its bad side of maybe misinformation, but there's a lot of information out there, and learning how to weed through that with the right organizations and the right resources, you could be successful with them.
Absolutely. Where should you get that reptile from to begin with? Is it always the pet store? I know there are rescues now for all sorts of different reptile species and amphibian. What do you think?
You know, it varies based on what you're getting. You know, adopting an animal is great, and it doesn't matter the species that you adopt. It always helps to provide a suitable next home for them. But not all animals come in ideal situation, you know, an ideal condition with appropriate optimum health. So I think it starts with educating yourself on what you can handle, learn what you need to. And then from there, you can make decisions based on what works for you. You know, well-started animals that have been fostered for a while, talking with the person who's been fostering, they can help you get started, certainly. Same thing with reaching out to people that breed the species with experience, because sometimes people breed things and they don't even know how they did it. A lot of times is to make sure you have the conversation, you know, what does it take, and get this set up ahead of time so you can tweak it. There's nothing worse than getting a brand new baby lizard and putting it in the cage and you haven't adjusted the temperatures, and the unfortunate happens where the animal expires from overheating or being too cold or too wet or too dry. So, you know, I can't emphasize the knowledge attainment in the beginning to start off with. And once you do that, you'll find there's lots and lots of suitable options, many of them tailored to specific people, depending on whether they live in an apartment or a house or otherwise.
Absolutely true. Now, what is your opinion as to, well, I don't know how many species we'll have time for, but let's go for it. One, at least, choice for people that haven't had a reptile or amphibian before, what would a choice be, a good one?
A good one. For a beginner, newbie, out of the box, start looking at some of the readily available species that are commonly bred in captivity. So stay away from animals that only come in from the wild. So you're looking at things like bearded dragons, you know, is a really good choice. But if you don't like a bearded dragon, requires live insects to feed as well as vegetation. Not everybody likes that. So you got to look, you know, you could look at different options. Generally, bearded dragons are a good beginner lizard, leopard geckos, and there's a couple other species of geckos that are common in captivity as well that people are providing. And the question is whether you want something you can handle or you just want to see, you know, have an animal that you can look at aesthetically. There's lots of geckos that are out there that are easy to care for, take up very little space. But basically, you're just adding water and food into their cage and you're not interacting. If that's good for you, There's a number of options. You want something without legs. Maybe legs are not what you want. There are certain species. For some people, that's true. You know,
yeah, I guess.
Not take it away from our wonderful legless lizards. That's a whole different thing. But with snakes especially, you've got a number of what we call colubrids, which are your temperate zone snakes, things like corn snakes and the family of corns and rat snakes are a very common. They're active during the day and night. They're fairly easy to feed either on live or non-live food items like frozen items that have been thawed out. Ball pythons are popular. They come with pros and cons depending on when you get them. They're very long-lived, but they don't take up a lot of space. But they do take a little bit more sophistication in the keeper's knowledge and housing. They get a little bit bigger. There's certainly much bigger species of snakes out there. I usually tell people shy away from them because they grow faster than your experience does. So stay away from, you know, many of the main pythons, even boa constrictors get probably bigger than most people are equipped to handle. And, you know, housing is a big factor. You know, you think about it, you talked about the $300 cage setup. You know, some of these animals, you know, they may be cheap on the front end, but they may be very expensive much later on down where thousands of dollars worth of housing is needed. Turtles and tortoises, real popular, unfortunately, are turtles, aquatic turtles. They're real cute, size of like maybe a quarter, a half a dollar. But they come with really high maintenance as they live primarily in a water habitat, even with a land source that people often neglect. They require specific husbandry that they have to, you know, you're changing hundreds of gallons of water on a weekly basis. They get big. And the worst part about it is there's so many of them. We don't have the ability to rehome them when an emergency comes up.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
These are animals. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say we're just about out of time here. I just want to emphasize something you said in passing, and that is, yes, pet stores, rescues, breeders that are reputable breeders, but not a breeder or anyone that takes animals out of the wild. That is never a good idea for a whole long list of reasons. Rich Crowley, Chicago Herpetological Society. What is the website for the Herp Society?
A great question. It's Chicago Herp, HERP.org.
Chicago Herp.org. It's that simple. Yep. Thank you, Rich. I appreciate all the rescue work you and others do because, you know, people who rescue dogs and cats, they don't get enough credit, but at least somebody somewhere sometimes credits them. You guys don't get that credit, so thank you so much for all you do.
We appreciate it. Thank you.
It's coming up on September 28th, the world's largest pet walk. That is to support Pet Partners. We'll hear more about that and more about Pet Partners. To learn more about the event, it's petpartners.org. And to learn more about Pet Partners, Annie Peters, the CEO, will be here momentarily. Meanwhile, next week on the show, Paul Owens, the original dog whisperer. Those who have listened to me for a long time know I am not a fan of the methods used by Cesar Millan, the dog whisperer. But this guy, completely different. And he's the original. He had a book to prove it. I could show you right here. It's called The Dog Whisperer. He has a new book out, and we'll talk about 50 lessons learned. And that's appropriate because he's been training dogs now for 50 years. Paul Owens, I've long wanted to talk with him, and he's on this show next week. Annie Peters is the longtime CEO of Pet Partners. Hi, Annie.
Hey, Steve, how are you?
I am great. You know, I mean, I often talk on this radio show I have for many years about how we benefit from the human-animal bond, and Pet Partners is the ultimate example of this. Can you explain what Pet Partners is?
I'm happy to, but first I want to say we all benefit from the good work you do. So thank you for helping to get the message out there.
Thank you.
So Pet Partners is the leading therapy animal organization. And what that means is therapy animals. We enable people to take their pet into places where they can serve people in their community often in need. It might be visits to your local hospital, the children's hospital there, nursing homes, schools to work with struggling readers, sometimes airport visits. It's a wonderful way to volunteer if you have a pet that you love dearly who also enjoys meeting new people.
But that's a good point to make. So therefore, this is not for every pet. So the pet has to be socialized, and the pet, and I say the word pet, because we're not only talking dogs here, are we?
We are not, although the large percentage of our therapy animal teams are dogs. We also have well-represented therapy cat teams. We have mini horses. We have some llamas, some birds, some guinea pigs, rabbits. So we register more species than any other organization. And this year, we have a big push to get more cat teams. So all your cat lover listeners out there, this is the year of the cat at Pet Partners. Come check us out at petpartners.org. And if you have a social cat, you might be able to volunteer in your community because let's face it, not everyone's a dog person. Lots of people are cat people. And this is especially true, Steve, in nursing homes. You know, someone who has spent their whole life living with a cat or cats, and now they're away from their animals. Do they like seeing a dog come? Sure they do. But there's nothing like a visit from a therapy cat if you're a cat lover.
So when the cat or dog or miniature horse or rabbit makes that visit, what is that animal doing for that person? And to be clear, these aren't animals wearing costumes, doing tricks, performing a magic show. To a great degree, they're just showing up. So why and how does that matter?
Yeah. So first of all, thank you for pointing that out, because our organization is really based on not just the belief, but also the science that something wonderful happens when we interact with animals. And to your point, it's not about the tricks. It's not about the costumes. These are sentient beings and they deserve to be treated with respect. What does happen, though, it's a connection. It may be tactile for some people, reaching out and the calming, soothing, stroking, petting of an animal. It can be that look into my eyes, that eye exchange that happens with some animals, and that release of the love hormone or the oxytocin that we feel when we look into a baby's eyes. We can experience that with dogs. And we also know that the dogs experience it too. For so many people, it's calming, it's soothing. For a struggling reader, it can be true advancements in their reading fluency, because a child reading to a pet, often a dog, but can be cats, guinea pigs are good listeners, our therapy birds are good listeners, that struggling reader will read longer. They'll be more likely to try to sound out the word because they don't feel like they're being judged by the animal in the same way they might be if they were reading to a human. There is so much good that your pet can do in the community if you and your pet are right for this kind of volunteer work.
You know, you brought up something really interesting that you kind of slid by, and I want to back up and talk about this. So I know you, Annie, and I know after getting off the radio with me, you're going to talk to someone. I've talked to Steve Dale. It was great. I got to communicate about what I love talking about. Or maybe when you make a public appearance, you say that after you make that appearance. There are other people that would go and make a public appearance just when they're kind of pushed to do it. They really don't want to do it and they don't have a good time doing it. I want to relate that to dogs, cats, and other species as well that are involved with the therapy programs. It turns out, and the great Aubrey Fine has led research on this, and others at this point have done research as well, that for the right dog and other species, we presume, they benefit too.
Absolutely. If you could see me, I'm smiling my head and nodding. And of course, our mention of our dear friend, Dr. Fine. These animals actually do. You know, there's a lot of dogs that love a job, right? And you'll hear the stories of our volunteer handlers talk about how when they get the therapy dog vest out, their dog just goes crazy because they know they're going to work that day. And they just really enjoy getting out and interacting with people. You know, the same is true for some cats. Now, granted, it takes a special cat, but there are some cats that are affiliative by nature too. And what a wonderful way to spend time with quality time with your pet. It can really deepen the bond that you have with that animal as well. Honestly, there's nobody who doesn't win in this volunteer role as long as the animal is enjoying what they're being asked to do.
And I want to talk about how all of this has changed. How long have you been with Pet Partners at this point?
10 years this weekend.
Perfect. Happy anniversary. But But I also want to talk about how the mindset has changed. I wonder if the pandemic had anything to do with it or not. I mean, there is a huge need today for animals who can do this. So get your ears perked up. It might be your dog, cat, mini horse, guinea pig, whatever you might have at home that might be right for this job. Now, and we'll give you information, by the way, in the Chicago area about how you might be able to participate. When you began 10 years ago, Annie, I would suggest that there was more pushback from the organizations. I mean, the facilities themselves, the nursing homes, the hospital groups, even the schools that had reading programs that didn't want to have reading programs. But I would suggest that that happened then. But today, it's hugely different.
There's been a shift, certainly. I mean, therapy animal visitation, it's been around now for a few decades, but it was a little bit more under the level of people really knowing what they were or knowing how to get started doing this work. Then there was sort of this push of people heard about this through great exposure, like the work that you do, and they wanted to get involved, but they were still knocking on doors, trying to find a facility where they could visit. Now, to your point, it's the other way. Facilities are coming to us, begging for therapy animal visits in their community, and there just aren't enough therapy animal teams to go around. You know, an animal can't, when we say, you know, a job where they go to work as a therapy animal, they're not there for 8 hours. Our program has a 2-hour maximum for a reason. Like 2 hours to a dog is like an 8-hour workday, 10-hour workday to you and I. So we need more therapy animal teams. We know there are more wonderful pets out there. We know there are compassionate people in the Chicago area who want to volunteer, who want to give back. Would love for them to come check out Pet Partners and see if they're a fit.
All right. So how do people do that? And how can you tell in advance that you might have an animal that is a fit? We are going to learn when we come back the answers to those questions with Annie Peters of Pet Partners on WGN. Annie Peters is the CEO of Pet Partners. Annie, you've been doing this for 10 years, and we talked about how when you first began that there was pushback. You wanted animals to go into hospitals and nursing home facilities, assisted living facilities, and the list goes on and on, including schools. However, today, you have more requests than there are animals for. Did the pandemic have anything to do with this shift, or was it happening anyway?
I think it was happening anyway. There certainly was a moratorium on those in-person visits, as we all remember being at home. Then there was sort of the crack was often, especially in healthcare, where our teams were being asked to come in and visit with the staff who were so stressed during that time. For the nursing homes, we had wonderful therapy animal volunteers who did window visits, parades for the nursing home residents who were away from their loved ones as well. And I think all of that just sort of contributed to this awareness that the incredible value that these animals bring when they are coming into a school or coming into a hospice room, that more and more facilities want therapy animals as part of their programming. So it probably contributed to the awareness, certainly.
Now, I'm sure you've had this happen to you. Someone says, my dog would be great for this. Meanwhile, the dog is jumping up on you. Happy dog. Not being aggressive, per se. Or maybe that, too. I don't. You know, people don't always see their animals for what they really are because it's yours. You know, just like your children, it's the same deal, I believe. And then we've talked about cats, but not every cat by any means is suitable to do this. So first of all, what should you think about to determine if you have a pet? And I'm including guinea pigs and parrots here and everything else, I suppose, that you allow, which is not every possible pet. So pet boa constrictor, I'm thinking Pet Partner says no to that one. So You have to consider the kind of pet in the first place, but then the temperament of that pet, Annie.
Yes, there's three things that you touched on. First of all, the species that we do allow, we look for enough of an indication of predictive behavior so you can tell if a situation is escalating in a way that you want to diffuse a situation, remove the animal, step back. We also look for enough information about zoonosis, the transmission of disease between animal and client, so that we can take sure that there are steps to mitigate any kind of disease transmission. So that's kind of a high level. How do we think about which animals as a species are suitable for this work? In terms of the individual animal, it doesn't have to be the most outgoing animal in the room. We say, oh, sure, you know, sometimes a golden retriever that says, hey, I'm here, let's get this party started. You know, they're perfect for this kind of work. But also animals with sort of a quiet confidence. It doesn't have to be a party animal, so to speak. We're just looking for animals who are comfortable and confident in new situations and meeting new people. This should bring joy to the animal's life. It should not be a stress on the animal. From the client's perspective, you touched on this as well. We have, as part of our evaluation process, there's a skills evaluation portion. That animal has to be responsive to basic commands, sit, stay, down, you know, not go after food that's on the tray in the hospital room. There's all sorts of things that we look at that you want the animal to be able to be under your control in a way that provides safety for the client and safety for the animal.
Now, do you have a test? So if it's a dog, but what if it's a cat? What if it's a guinea pig? I don't know that the guinea pig needs to sit on command necessarily. So how do you test the various species without going into too much detail?
So yeah, they are very different. Obviously, we're not looking for a guinea pig to sit, stay, you know. We are looking for cats that will walk on a leash. For guinea pigs, some of our animals are carried in a basket. So again, though, we are looking that there's some indication that you can understand that animal's behavior, that you do know when your guinea pig is stressed. You do know if the cat is not enjoying the interaction. There's a portion in the exam, in the evaluation, where a cat is shared between laps. So we'll have volunteers who come work at our evaluations and making sure that that cat is truly comfortable being handled and passed and stroked and petted, and that you are not literally dragging your cat to that interaction.
Now, do you go to a place to be tested? How does this work?
Yeah, most of the evaluations take place just in a neutral facility. It may be a hospital dedicates a conference room or some space at a nursing home that we can use. And it's more of a simulation of what that visit will actually look like. We have trained, certified volunteer evaluators who know what to look for during the evaluation. And what they're really looking for, Steve, it's how does the human and the animal work as a team? If that animal gets startled, what's their reaction? Do they look up at their handler and go, whoa, what was that? And the handler sort of responds with a head nod and a confirmation, I heard it too, it's okay. And the animal responds with, okay, I can relax, it's okay. So we're looking for that teamwork, which is why so many people say an unexpected benefit of this kind of volunteer work is it deepens the relationship they have with their pet.
Yes, I've done this work, as you know, and I concur with what you said. I mean, the bond somehow becomes more intense because you're both working and you're working as teammates together. So no wonder that bond becomes more intense. And you're doing it on a semi-regular or regular basis. We only have about 2 minutes left here, Annie, and I know you can talk for 2 hours at least on this topic. And that has to do with the benefits perhaps you've seen yourself of how someone who had a stroke or maybe a child who has difficulty reading for any number of reasons. And the list goes on and on and on of people who are changed even because of a visit with an animal.
Yeah, I have so many wonderful stories that our volunteers love sharing. But I'll tell you one that I heard recently is one of our volunteers was visiting in the hospital with a young man who had lost his hand. And he had a new adaptive device attached that, you know, is connected somehow to the brain. I'm not going to profess I know how any of this works, but he was struggling to accept the new device and to be encouraged to use it. And they brought a dog into the hospital room, And without even thinking about it, the gentleman reached out to pet the dog with that arm, with that hand. And that was really the first time that they saw an effort to start to use that new device, prosthetic device, and hopefully be able to send him home and return to a life that he enjoyed with much more motion than he might have had otherwise.
And there's so many stories like that, you know, and it is just amazing what animals can do. So if you'd like to do this with your animal, how can people learn more?
Easy. Come visit us at petpartners.org, and you can learn everything there about how to get started. We provide wonderful, I'm going to brag on my staff for a minute, world-class quality online education, everything that you need to learn as a handler to do this in a way that's safe, impactful, meaningful, and good for your pet too.
Well, congratulations on all the incredible work that you, your staff, and greatly the volunteers all over America do. Thank you, Annie Peters.
Thank you.
There have never been so many pets in the United States. 66% of U.S. homes have at least one pet, and many of those homes have more than one pet. Just over a quarter of U.S. homes have at least one cat, and well over half the U.S. homes have at least one dog. Here's some data. There are more than 900 million pet dogs worldwide. In Europe, for example, the number of pets exceeds the number of children. That's in Europe. What about the United States? Same thing holds true in the United States. Millennials and Generation Z generate 57% of pet ownership. Millennials are getting married later, and increasingly, they don't have children, except they do consider their pets their fur babies. And there's lots of data to suggest benefits to having pets, but that part's not new. We'll talk to you with lots that is new next week, bright and early on WGN.